going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Ringside Rundown Podcast, brought to you by TWM.news. My name is Eric Vasquez, and joining me on the line is my podcasting partner in crime. Yes, that rhymes. She is Shay Hickson. Shay, what's going on, my friend?
What is going on? It's a Tuesday night. It's not our usual recording night, but so that's a little weird. But other than that, can't really complain today. It's been a good day, good weekend. Can't complain.
You're getting ready for the holiday? You got any special plans for Turkey Day?
Well, my parents and I started the tradition now of we go to like a nicer restaurant to eat instead of actually like cooking.
Okay.
Yeah, just to break up the old kind of tradition and start a new one. So I'm like, that's fine. And then I got a couple like Friendsgiving parties to go to. So yeah, a lot of good plans.
Those are always fun because I like to eat food. This is my favorite holiday of the year. And it's basically because I love to eat food. So you seem like you got it all planned out with your Friendsgiving. You got multiple spots to go to. It seems pretty lucky.
Yeah, and I fully agree with you. Like, the best thing is the food. So this is going to be heaven for both of us because we just love the food so much. But should be a good one.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, this isn't a food podcast. This is a pro wrestling podcast, and we do this every week. And this week, we're going to be talking about AEW Full Gear. What a show it was from Newark, New Jersey, in the Prudential Center. A lot of things happening, a lot of shifting in momentum in a certain way. It seems like AEW... How do I put this? I was thinking about this while I was watching the show with some of the decisions that they were making. Mm-hmm. It seems like they want to wash away all the bad stuff that happened with Punk.
Yeah.
And just start anew.
Yeah. You'd almost want to say like a new era kind of thing, as cliched as that sounds, but that pretty much is what it felt like.
Yeah, it felt like a lot of decisions were made this so that they're willing to go to a different route. But we'll get into it. What did you think of the show overall before we break it down match by match?
Honestly, overall, I thought it was really good. It definitely wasn't like my favorite AEW pay-per-view that they put on, but it was still, I think, pretty solid. From the top down, it was just competitive match after competitive match. Some better than others, but I honestly couldn't really complain.
Yeah, it felt like a good show, especially like we always say, keep your expectations low and you're never disappointed. So that's kind of what it felt like. You were just going into it like, okay, here's a new show to check out. Something's going to happen. Obviously, the big main event was probably what everybody was looking forward to. But there were a lot of different things on the card that people were looking forward to, like the return of Saraya to the ring. I know we talked at length in our previous episodes about her return to the ring, and especially what it meant to you as a fan, as you know, she's one of your favorites, what it meant for her to come back to the ring. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. There was a pre-show that happened before the show, AEW Zero Hour. There were, I believe, three matches on that pre-show. Yes, it was three matches. We're going to run through them really quickly. Best Friends, Orange Cassidy and Rocky Romero, and Danhausen defeated The Factory by pinfall. Danhausen was the big surprise. And for me, this was kind of neat because it showed that Danhausen was a little bit more serious. And like we finally got to see some of his wrestling ability that you and I have been clamoring for since he signed with AEW, that we felt like he was kind of mismanaged, and finally they gave him a little bit of a brighter spotlight to shine.
Yeah. And honestly, the things he was doing in that match, if you literally go onto any like YouTube free match that he's been in, you would have seen that. Like, as non-serious Danhausen, as, like, regular Danhausen, like, the teeth, getting, like, kicking him in the face with the teeth, and it's just, like, where's this been the entire time? But, I think I'm kind of getting the sense here, at least from kind of, like, what you saw later in the show with that one little backstage thing with Orange and Hager, it might be one of those things where, kind of like how I actually called it, where... Outside the ring, Dan's, like, the very nice, goofy kind of Dan, but then in the ring, he's the very evil, like, literally impaling people with spikes, Danhausen. Yeah. So, I'm glad I talked that into existence, hopefully, but if they continue to do that is one the big question. I would like to think they would, because people liked it. I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool, because it was just like about damn time that you let him have a big moment like that. But I'm excited to see if they keep this up, because I think they should.
I think so too. I think if they give him a little bit more to shine and show what he can do, he's really going to captivate people the way he's captivated people on the independent scene before he came to AEW. So it's only a matter of time.
Exactly.
Yes, and then next up we had Ricky Starks take on Brian Cage. Ricky Starks ended up getting the win, and this was for the semifinals in the AEW World Championship Eliminator Tournament. That means the final will take place tomorrow, or as of this recording, it is tomorrow. If you're listening to it, it's later today, and it'll be Ethan Page taking on Ricky Starks for the final of the AEW World Championship Eliminator Tournament, so look out for that. And then finally on the pre-show, we had Eddie Kingston take on his idol in Jun Akiyama from All Japan Pro Wrestling. This was, for me, a really big highlight. Another one of those things where I wish that this match was on the main show rather than the pre-show. And it happened to be another Eddie Kingston match that I wish was on the main show than the pre-show.
How many times do I have to say that? Because honestly, they went out and put a main event level match on a pre-show of all things. So it just shows like how much that meant to Eddie, because again, that was like his mentor. That's like, that was his like idol growing up. So to have that kind of moment was a really big deal for him. And it showed.
Yeah, it really did. He was very emotional. And I think that's kind of what put the match over for me, was just that raw emotion that we know Eddie Kingston is capable of showing. He is the most legit man in pro wrestling, I gotta say. He's the most legit, most real. What you see is what you get. This is not a character. This is the actual person. And it's getting over. I think if they don't capitalize on this, it'll be a grave mistake.
Yeah, exactly. Because they could kind of ride that line a little bit with Eddie, where no matter how many stupid decisions they have made in his booking, his match with Jericho, the big example, people are still behind him. People still love him. So I think AEW would be very stupid not to capitalize on this sooner rather than later, because I'd say he's more than earned it at this point.
I think so, too. I think they can make a really compelling story just making him the man of the people and try to catapult him into the main event scene. And maybe for the world title in that respect, even though he was eliminated in the first round of the world title eliminator tournament, I think there's such a good story that you could write that'll put him in the main event scene that you hope to see it, if not now, hopefully sometime in 2023 when they realize the gem that they have in Eddie Kingston.
I hope so, because whatever it happens, it'll be long overdue.
It definitely would be. And that was the pre-show, 0 Hour, which I believe is still available on YouTube. So if you want to check that out on YouTube, go ahead. It's available. Just search AEW and you can find it there. Again, Best Friends defeat The Factory. Ricky Starks defeats Brian Cage. And Eddie Kingston defeats his idol, Jun Akiyama. So that was a great pre-show that led to the main show. And the first match of the night on the main show, on the main card, was a steel cage grudge match between Jungle Boy Jack Perry and Luchasaurus. And this was one match that was fairly low on my radar, but man, let me tell you, what a banger opener it was.
Right, and it's sad that it was under your radar to begin with, because that just shows you how odd Jungle Boy's booking's been lately, because you literally made a big deal about him for the longest time about how he's the pillar of AEW and this and that, and then that's how you treat him? Like, it was just mind-boggling to me. So it's a shame that a match like this, most of the fans, us included, were like, eh, sure, like, why not? Like, it should be good, but I'm not really too excited for it. And yeah, I think they kind of took that personally, because my God, that was a great opener for that show. It was kind of started off like slow, but then I think they did that on purpose, because then it just goes off the rails quickly, and topping it off with that elbow drop from the top of the cage, that was a holy shit moment.
Definitely a holy shit moment. For me, I think this is the one time where I think blood definitely worked in a match.
Yes.
I think the blood made Jungle Boy look like a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he looked like, you know, he can stand up, and it took away the visual that he was outsized by Luchasaurus. He was bleeding, but he was still fighting back. So it kind of really made him a tough guy. I also like the idea that the match was pinfall submission only. Even though there was some action that happened outside of the cage, they didn't end the match there with any escapes. I wish more cage matches would go that route where it's pinfall submission only, and maybe do some stuff on the outside of the cage where it's not escape and thus affecting the match. I just think this was a great opener. It was a great way to start the show.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yes. And again, Jungle Boy Jack Perry defeats Luchasaurus with the snare trap. So he defeated him via submission, especially after that massive elbow drop off the top of the cage through a table. What a visual it was. Definitely a banger opener. And then we move on to a match that really, you want to talk about high on the radar. It definitely was high on the radar for me. It was Death Triangle defending the Trios Championship, Pac, Penta El Cerro Miedo, and Rey Fénix against the Elite, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks, the returning Elite after 2 months after the all-out fiasco, I guess you could say, where they had to take a suspension, a little bit of a break, and they're back. And the one thing I noted from the get-go is they came out to Carry On My Wayward Son, a great banger track in its own right.
Oh, yeah.
And the reception, the ovation that they got was out of this world.
Loud. Like, deafening loud.
It was insane. I was just not... I knew they would get a big reaction. I didn't think it was going to be that big.
No, I didn't either, but I guess that just shows you how much the fans miss the Elite, and from some of the chants during the match, they pretty much told you what side they were on in that whole all-out fiasco. Yeah, that was something, and it was one of those where it was a little mind-blowing, because the fans weren't spurred on by anything. They just felt the need to start that. So, and it wasn't in, I guess it was just like surprising where clearly somebody had to have started it, but you wouldn't have expected the entire crowd to get into it. You would have just expected like people being like, okay, whatever. It's just like some fans just being like snarky or whatever, but no, they were not too thrilled. And I guess it honestly makes sense, because we were pretty much robbed of seeing the Elite for a while. So I would be upset as well. Maybe not to that degree, but I could see why they were mad.
Typical Jersey crowd.
Yeah, they are. My mom would probably agree. As a native of New Jersey, she would probably agree with that. They're a little rowdy, but yeah, that was surprising, but not surprising considering where they were.
Right. And as far as the match wasn't anything out. I mean, it was as good as you can expect it to be. I mean, Death Triangle and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. I mean, on paper, that just sounds like a banger match. And it actually was a banger match. It was basically what you would expect when you have that match on paper, a bunch of high spots, a bunch of flips, dives, super kicks and things like that, near falls, close calls, kickouts, and all that stuff that you would come to expect from a match like this on paper. But they do it so well that, I mean, it's just captivating to me. I know some people are like, oh, it's the Young Bucks, blah, blah, blah. I'm just so, I don't know what it is that when it happened, when I understand that the Young Bucks have a formula and a match that they go by, and so does Kenny Omega and the Elite in the whole. They have a formula where their matches kind of follow the same pattern. But for me, it's just like, I can't help but watch.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it.
It's one of those where you just know that they're that good where it doesn't even shock you anymore that the match was good or great. It was just like, okay, just another, you know, Saturday night. Like,
yeah,
no big deal.
Yeah, that's a very good point. This match, like we said, it was just a spot fest all over the place. It came down to the very end where Rey Fénix used the ring bell hammer given to him by Pac, who's been egging him on these past couple weeks to kind of tap into his dark side, his evil side, and do what it takes to win no matter at what cost, even if you can risk disqualification. So Pac enters the head of Rey Fénix, gives him the ring bell, and when Kenny Omega had Rey Fénix up for the one-winged angel, Rey Fénix just clocks him in the head with the ring bell, rolls him up in a victory roll, and gets the 1-2-3 and Death Triangle retain the AEW World Trios Championship. Any other thoughts to the ending of the match and potentially having Death Triangle be a heel faction?
Honestly, I think I was just surprised at the fact that so many people were surprised about the ending, because I could not believe the amount of people that just expected the Elite to just waltz back in and win the titles back. Like, it almost kind of reminded me of the whole Sasha Banks and Naomi situation. I mean, obviously not as blatant and, you know, as that situation was, but at the end of the day, the Elite were still involved in, like, an altercation and punches were still thrown, so that could have been another slippery slope of, oh, well, they can just come right back and just win the titles. That doesn't really, I wouldn't be too thrilled about that if I was in the locker room. I mean, just me personally, it's just like, okay, you pretty much suspend them quietly for months and you just, they're under investigation pretty much essentially for a fight. And yeah, I don't think that would have been the best idea to just be like, okay, here you go, just get your titles back. I mean, I think that would kind of be a slap in the face of Death Triangle too, because that would pretty much have just given the impression that, oh, you were just the title holders or the placeholders until the Elite came back. So I was perfectly okay with Death Triangle winning. Kind of surprised the Fénix finally gave in. I mean, I guess you should have seen it coming, but you would just expect someone like him to, you know, kind of battle through it and just kind of not listen to Pac. But it should be interesting to see, because, I mean, Penta's been a heel before, if I remember correctly, on the indies back in, like, other promotions, so yes. I don't really think the heel thing's going to be a big deal. Fénix, on the other hand, is going to be interesting to see how he can adjust to that as well, considering his brother was usually the bad guy. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how Death Triangle as a whole becomes a heel faction.
Yes, and the one interesting part about this is this was match one of a best of seven series that was announced last that Saturday night. They're actually gonna do this to the best of seven, so we could potentially have six more matches down the road between these two factions and groups, and it's probably gonna just blow people's minds. I know I can't wait for it. I'm expecting a huge spot fest, but like I said, like, You have to go into this knowing what the expectations are. You keep them low so you're not disappointed. But we know it's the Young Bucks, so we know what kind of match they're going to deliver. Everything is crisp, clean, great tag team work. It just doesn't follow the same formula that everybody's used to. They kind of do their own thing, and I think it works for them. They've still put on banger matches.
Yeah, and this honestly reminds me of the best of seven that Cesaro and Sheamus had a few years ago and how great that was. So now you have two of the best tag teams in the world doing the exact same thing. And yeah, I'd say we're in for a bit of a treat.
I think so. I think so. Definitely look out for that one. The best of seven between Death Triangle and the Elite. So moving on in the card, we had Jade Cargill defending the TBS championship against a thief in the night. And Nyla Rose, who stole Jade Cargill's TBS title. I thought this was a very... I hate the idea of stealing the championship and then parading around as if you're the champion. But I thought this was a way to kind of be sympathetic towards Jade. Like, she earned that title. She should be the one holding it because she looks great with the title. Nyla Rose didn't win it, so she looks horrible with the title, I thought.
I mean, I will say, though, I'm pretty sure I said it last week, but I love that they've just finally let Nyla have her personality on camera, sure, too, because we all know, anybody that follows her on Twitter knows she's absolutely hilarious, so I'm glad that they allowed her to showcase some of that on TV, because it makes her more interesting, it makes her funny, it makes you want to tune in to see what she wants to do. But also, it still kind of makes me feel like Jade, it kind of makes her look a little stupid, because it's like, you mean to tell me that you waited, how long was it that Nyla stole that belt? Like a month, maybe?
A month.
You mean to tell me you couldn't in a month get your own belt back, and you're Jade Cargill of all people? So I'm like, okay, that makes you look a little dumb, but whatever. But yeah, I get what you're saying, where it's like, obviously you want to feel a little sympathy, but I guess I just wasn't feeling the sympathy, because I'm like, if you're Jade Cargill, you could fight through everybody to get your belt back. But as far as the match goes, unfortunately, I hate to say it, because you know I love Nyla. I was not a fan of this match. I really wasn't. No, because it was just blatantly obvious from the get-go that these two were never on the same page at all. This entire match. It looked clunky. It looked disjointed. It just didn't look clean or technical or anything. And did we ever really think Nyla was going to win? Like, come on. It's just kind of getting to the point now where it's like, the mystique, at least for me, of Jade Cargill is running very thin, because now it's like, okay, well, if someone like Nyla can't even beat her, who the hell else is left? There's literally nobody, with the exception of a certain somebody that's clearly not going to be able to wrestle for a while, that you know exactly who I'm talking about. What are you going to do until she comes back? Like, come on. Who could believably right now, not named Chris Statlander, beat Jade Cargill for this belt?
That's the one conundrum with the whole undefeated streak and everything like that. Usually when that happens, you could point to this person and say, down the line, I think this person's going to do it. Like, for example, I think down the line, Cody Rhodes is going to be the one to finally defeat Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. That's for another discussion, but I'm just using that for an example. You can kind of point your finger at a certain someone and say, down the line, this is how it's going to go down. They just need a couple more steps to get there. In the case of Jade Cargill, there's no one to really point the finger to and say, down the line, she's going to have a match with that person, and that person is going to defeat the, you know, Jade Cargill and kind of take the mystique. Because there's no mystique with her undefeated streak, and I know they're trying hard to make it seem that way, but they're running short of people to feed to Jade Cargill. You know,
it's almost like they've done it too good of a job of trying to make the mystique, where it's like, you could literally throw any woman's name on a match card with Cargill and everyone would immediately go, okay, yeah, Jade's winning. You can't even make it competitive, because you've done nothing to make it competitive. Like, you've never, I really cannot remember a single woman that has wrestled Jade where it actually looked like, oh, she may be in trouble, or, oh, this is actually going to be a competitive match. It's literally been, okay, well, the opponent may get some offense in, but then as soon as Jade gets a hold of her, it's over. Like, it's not even creative. It's not really competitive. And it just kind of gets boring after a while. And like you said, right now, because obviously my obvious choice, that's not happening for what, months? I don't even know how long it's going to be. So until Chris Statlander comes back, there's nobody. Like, you could literally look down the entire roster of AEW and not a single woman I could see believably beating Jade for the title. The only person that I could think of that would even be just maybe a stretch is Mercedes Martinez. That's a
stretch, but that's a good stretch.
And because that's all I got, because they've given me no other choice.
And that would be such a great story. Because I feel like the story would be great. And Mercedes is such a veteran that she can carry someone like Jade Cargill with the experience, the lack of experience that Jade has.
Yeah.
The experience that Mercedes has would make up for it, and they can have a great match. So it's a stretch, but man, that would be a really good stretch, because like I said, they're running out of bodies to feed to Jade Cargill, which is crazy, because months ago I was saying how much WWE needed female bodies in their women's division, and now we're saying the exact same thing for AEW, and it's like the script has been flipped.
I think the worst part is that if you look at the division as a whole, they have the bodies, they're just not using the bodies.
Yeah, that's true. They have a bunch of them, But it's almost like they have a bunch of them, but who can really go? Like there's at the top of the heap, before we get ahead of ourselves, there's the interim women's champion, there's Britt Baker, mm-hmm. there's Toni Storm.
Yep.
Okay. After them, who can go, who's at their level?
Yeah, like Sheeta, but the problem is she hasn't been booked properly to have that be believable. Talent-wise, if we just went based strictly off of talent, that would be a whole different conversation. But then when you add the booking into it, that's when things kind of get a little muddy, because then it's, well, of course, though, insert woman's name here is definitely on par with them in terms of talent, but booking-wise, you can't believably be like, oh yeah, she could totally like take them down, no problem. So it's a bit of a mess right now. I mean, the only problem is if you watch Dark or Elevation, then you get to see some of these other women, but that's not Dynamite or Rampage. That's not what everybody's really watching. So yeah, they might need to do something, because I'm not so sure people are going to be too thrilled about Jade holding onto this belt until Statlander comes back. Because I'm still thinking, my heart of hearts, that has to be the one that beats her. It's got to be Stat. But you can't really have a Roman Reigns level reign with somebody like Jade, because she just isn't experienced enough. Roman, absolutely. He's been able to do it because they know how to make things fresh. They're not making things fresh with this. This is the same feud over, I mean, to a degree, you know what I mean, though, over and over again, where
it's the same formula.
Yeah, it's literally just, okay, you think you can step up, we'll see, and then they lose. It's just like a new coat of paint on it, but you can still kind of see through the cracks a little bit. It's the same old boring story, and it's just getting really just old.
Yeah. I hope that I want to see what's going to happen next. That's the only compelling part, is like, okay, who's next in line? How are we going to make this a believable feeder for Jade Cargill? Is it going to be someone that she can, work with? Is it someone that can actually take the title from her? Something like that. But after that, that kind of wears off pretty quickly once they get into the ring and the bell rings. That kind of wears off pretty quick.
Yeah, and you can't even say, oh, we'll just bring insert person into AEW to take the belt off her. Well, okay, great. You solved that problem, but just added a whole other problem, because now you've added yet another woman to this roster, and it's just, you can't continuously keep signing these people and expect everybody to get decent shots. So it's like, they kind of have booked themselves into a corner here, where they might be damned if they do, they if they don't, for at least 3 or 4 more months, I'd assume.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you hit the nail on the head with everything that's going on with Jade Cargill. She retains the TBS championship, hitting Nyla Rose with Jaded, and she gets her title back. So good for her. Like we said, it's what's next for Jade Cargill, and that's the big story going from there. Next up on the card, we had Chris Jericho defend the Ring of Honor World Championship against Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and Sammy Guevara. This one, I'm anything that Chris Jericho does, I'm kind of meh. This was okay. I enjoyed the parts where it was Chris Jericho versus Sammy Guevara. I thought that was compelling. And I also enjoyed the parts where it was Bryan Danielson versus Claudio Castagnoli. I thought the intermingling and that stuff was cool. Other than that, it was a match. And of course, Chris Jericho somehow,
again,
some way, I don't know what he has on the AEW brass, what kind of dirt he has on them, but he wins the match and he retains the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. I don't know, man. I don't know what the logic is in having Chris Jericho as champion. I know maybe the only thing I can see it is they're trying to shop for a TV deal for Ring of Honor. They need a big name. Chris Jericho is still a big name, and he's a recognizable name in wrestling, but it just goes against everything that Ring of Honor stands for.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Ring of Honor was, about pure talent in the ring, not, you know, booking decisions and playing politics. No, it was how good you were in the ring got you high up on the card. And it just feels like Chris Jericho, he's got nothing to prove. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's nothing. He adds more value as an insider that can give you advice than he does someone pinning you to the mat.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's safe to say for both of us, we were not really looking forward to this match going into it, because it's like, why would we? Because it's the Jericho Appreciation Society. We could care less about it. The match itself wasn't bad, I don't think. I'm glad they didn't over-rely on, oh, the Jericho Appreciation Society and the Blackpool Combat Club are turning on each other and we're just going to beat that into the ground the entire match. They, like, knew when to allude to it, but they didn't, like, beat you over the head with it, so I appreciated that. We all knew Jericho was going to win because, again, why wouldn't we? And, yeah, it was definitely not fantastic, but it just wasn't insulting either, so it was there.
I mean, any other result would have been great. Oh, Claudio, yeah, if he would have won, would have got his revenge back, and I think he would have been a great ROH championship. Danielson, you give him the belt, it's nostalgia. He's the guy who made the title what it is today. Uh-huh. So you give it back to him. Sammy Guevara, a dark horse, but he's still young.
I don't think people would have liked that one too much, honestly. I wouldn't have.
No, they wouldn't have liked it. But the simple fact is you're putting the title on someone who's still young, but still has a lot of experience. Yeah. And can kind of make it work as a heel champion. I'm not saying I would have enjoyed it, but those are options that are better than putting it on Jericho for the sake of putting it on Jericho. Because you have no other reason. That we haven't been given another reason that says the reason Chris Jericho won this match and is the champion is for this reason right here.
Yeah. Nothing.
So I got nothing. So for me, that's what happens. Chris Jericho retains the ROH championship. Now, I know this next match, you definitely have a lot to talk about. It was after a 5-year hiatus due to injury, Saraya makes her return to the ring to take on Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. I'm going to give you the floor because I kind of took over the Chris Jericho hate train. So let me know what you thought of the match.
Okay, so first off, I think it's very safe to say that seeing Saraya back into the ring 5 years after pretty much watching her retire and just like pretty much crying my eyes out in my like childhood living room to seeing her finally come back and wrestle was like absolutely surreal for me. Because it was like, it pretty much was like what she said during her retirement speech, that she didn't want it to be the end, and like Danielson and Edge gave her hope that she could do this again, and she did. So just to see her go back and wrestle again, it's insane. Like, it still just blows my mind. The match itself, I know some people did not like it. I honestly didn't have a problem with it, because you kind of have to look at this a little objectively, because we talked about this last week when we were setting this whole thing up. You could not expect someone who has not wrestled in 5 years to just nothing ever happened. Like, just step right back into the ring. Like, she was back in her prime. No ring rust whatsoever. Nothing. It wasn't even sloppy. It just wasn't, I guess, over the top as people, I think, were expecting, maybe. I think the only thing I had that I didn't like about it was it wasn't dramatic enough. I think it could have been a little more dramatic. And, like, the ending was kind of odd, where I'm like, oh, that's it. Like, that, it just, there wasn't a build up to the ending. So that I wasn't a fan of. But other than that, the match was fine. I didn't hate it. I still loved it, because it's like two of my favorite wrestlers got to wrestle a dream match. So it was not pretty, because it wasn't supposed to be. Because, again, you're expecting somebody who, as great as Saraya is, you can't stop doing anything for that long a time and expect to just get right back into it like nothing ever happened. So I'm perfectly fine with the match itself. It wasn't sloppy. It was just not as, again, high energy as I think people were expecting. However, the outcome of the match, I'm a little torn on, because obviously Saraya winning was the obvious, like, feel-good comeback story win. I just think you could have had so much more potential if you didn't have her win. Because,
really?
Yeah, because let's think about this for a minute. You had, leading up to this, Paige said, or yeah, same thing, Saraya saying, this is my house, even though, as Britt said, you just waltzed in and just assumed it was your house. Mm-hmm. And talking herself up, like, this is what I've been waiting for. It's just like, this is like my house, my time. I still have it. I still got what it takes. What would have been, that was the perfect setup for an underdog story for Britt to beat her and prove that, you know what, all that stuff you've been saying for weeks, you're not, it was a lie. You lied to yourself. You're not as good as you thought you were. So get to the back of the line. You could have easily had that where Saraya starts to doubt herself. You got to get the like crowd into it to like sympathize with her and build her back up and slowly make her way back into what she was 5 years ago before she retired. You could have easily done that. That was so much more compelling to me than just, oh, well, the person that's coming back automatically has to win.
Yeah, I can see your point. That's a good point. Yeah, I agree with everything that you said. You know, the match was fine. It wasn't anything offensive or anything like that. And it could have used a little bit more drama towards the end. I think maybe if Saraya would have went for a pinfall after the first DDT and Britt kicked out, and then Saraya hit another one, mm-hmm. I think that would have added a little bit more drama and showed that, you know, she, you know, put the nail in the coffin, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to me, the match was passable. Like I said, I keep my expectations low. So it's not like I was expecting a 5-star classic. And like you said, and like we said before, 5 years is a long layoff. This is like riding a bike for a lot of wrestlers. But
yeah,
for some, it takes a little bit to get back. And this is a high profile match.
Yeah. You know,
this wasn't some brinky dink fight. This was a high profile match. And I think Saraya did the best that she could. And I think it was passable.
Yeah, I think she did better than a lot of people were expecting her to do. She did really well. Like, her moves still look great. It didn't look sloppy or disjointed or out of place. It was good. And I think the thing people are going to forget here, because of course everyone's going to talk about Saraya and the comeback and winning and whatever, you have to give massive props to Britt too, because you put her in the most unenviable position of all time. You are in charge of making sure one of the most beloved female wrestlers of her generation, coming back after 5 years from a neck injury, does not get hurt. If Saraya gets hurt in that match, Britt is getting torn apart on social media. She will get destroyed, canceled. That crowd is going to turn on her. And like the worst case scenario imaginable if you're Britt. Something happens, you're getting blamed for it, even if it's a freak accident. Just perfect example. Look back when Saraya got hurt in the first place, back in WWE. People eviscerated Sasha Banks, and it was literally just a drop kick to the back of the shoulder. It was literally nothing. But people tore her to shreds on social media, so you think that was bad back then? Imagine what it would have been for Britt. So to have to be in charge of that match and to make it as good as it did, because it really had no right being as good as it was. It could have just been a total train wreck because, oh, well, again, Saraya has been gone for 5 years, so she probably is not going to be as good as she once was. It was still pretty decent, and I think that a lot has to be said, give credit to Britt for it, because she pretty much, I guarantee you, was the one that probably had to call that match, because she's been, as she's self, as much as she says it in character, it pretty much is the truth. She has been pretty much carrying this division for years. So to be put in that kind of position, I could not even imagine the amount of pressure that was on her shoulders to make sure not only that this match isn't a total train wreck, but to also not injure Saraya at all, or just make sure she's as safe as possible. Because some of those bumps that Saraya took, oh my goodness, they were, they looked brutal, but Britt knew how to make it look brutal but safe at the same time.
the neck breakers in particular. Yeah, I was definitely pinpointed into that. And good job by both women, like you said, for being safe, but also believable for sure.
Exactly. So I definitely do not agree with the people that said it was an absolute terrible match, because I enjoyed it, obviously, just being me. But objectively, I thought it was a pretty decent match. And if this turns into a rivalry with these two, I am not going to complain in the slightest, because once Saraya starts getting her feet under her and she starts going back to like what she was in WWE, imagine the matches these two are going to have.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this would be a good one to run back. I don't know how you can build it up to do a run back, but I think it'll be good for a run back. And what will happen is they had the one match out and they got it out of the way. Now they're a little bit more comfortable with each other, and now they can put on an even more of a banger match than this one. So I think running it back is a safe bet.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So next up, after Saraya defeats Britt Baker, I don't know what she's calling her new move. It's the Rampage DDT that she was using in WWE. Yeah. She hits two of those and gets the win, her first match back in 5 years. Big emotional moment. And then we move on to kind of the dark point in the card with the next two matches. We had Samoa Joe take on Wardlow, who was defending the TNT title against Samoa Joe and Powerhouse Hobbs. This match, it kind of felt like it would have been better on Dynamite.
Yeah, and you know who I felt bad for this entire match, and just in general, Hobbs. He got shafted with this whole thing, because what was the reason of him being there? Like, as good as he is in the ring, he deserves a little more than just playing second fiddle to Samoa Joe and Wardlow. He should have been treated as an equal, and it was pretty obvious he was not. So, that's a shame. Not gonna lie, I did not expect Samoa Joe to win, but there we go. But I guess that means you're gonna get Wardlow potentially on Ring of Honor now, so that's like good for them, but I still can't get over that poor Hobbs is just getting screwed over in this. But okay. Yeah, it's just I don't know. That whole thing, even outside of Samoa Joe, like, take Samoa Joe out of it, and then you just look at the booking of Wardlow and Hobbs separately. God, they haven't been good lately. The booking's just been terrible, and especially Wardlow, of all people, everyone was losing their minds for this guy when he won the TNT title, and then as soon as he had the belt, they're just like, yeah, now what? Like, what do you do? You stuck him with Smart Mark Sterling in a feud with him and Nice, like, really? That's the best you could do for Wardlow? Like, that was one of the questionable booking decisions with AEW, where I'm like, what are you doing? Like, Wardlow has no business being in a comedy feud, which is essentially what that was. So what are we doing? He deserves a lot more than beating up a bunch of security guards just because. Like, I don't get what the problem's been lately. And then poor Hobbs has just been like playing second fiddle to everyone for a very long time. So yeah, it's just a shame. I mean, I guess the good thing is we're gonna get a Samoa Joe and Wardlow match at some point, but with the way this all's been going, I'm not even really excited for it. So definitely not mission accomplished, I think.
Yeah, there you have it. The way this panned out was, it's a triple threat match, so it's no disqualification. Samoa Joe takes one of the titles, clocks one of the guys over the top of the head, and then I think he put Hobbs in the coquina clutch, and Hobbs is the one that passed out, and this was over by technical submission. And Samoa Joe is the new TNT champion, alongside being the Ring of Honor television champion, which is kind of weird. So he's double TV champion.
Yeah, literally.
He's literally double TV champion, because he's the TV champion in Ring of Honor. He's also a network TNT champion for AEW. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's, and I mean, at least we get heel Samoa Joe, because his stuff back in NXT and WWE was really good as a heel. So, yeah, sure, we'll go with it.
yeah, sure, why not? And another yeah, sure, why not match was the next match on the card. We had Sting and Darby Allin take on Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. This match would probably would another one that would have been better on Dynamite rather than on a pay-per-view. Nothing really exciting happening there.
Yeah.
Sting and Darby Allin pick up the win against Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. This was no disqualification, so they tried to make it compelling by having the match go all over the place and Jeff Jarrett use his guitar and things like that, and Satnam Singh getting involved, catching Darby Allin like a rag doll. You know, they tried their best. But nobody wants to see Jeff Jarrett in 2022 in the ring.
No. I remember last week we were talking about when I said, oh yeah, I'm like interested in all of these matches for certain reasons. And this was the one that you brought up of like, are you sure about that? And my reason was because I wanted to see if they were able to make this actually literally interesting enough for people to care about. And if you've, I hate to say this because I like Darby, but it's like, if you've seen one Sting and Darby Allin match, you've seen them all. It literally has just been every pay-per-view tag team, no DQ match they've had for months and months on end. This time it just happened to be Lethal and Jarrett, and those two really aren't compelling to me either. So it's just like, great.
I look at this the same way I look at Chris Jericho. It's like, it's going to be 2023. Let's get these guys out of here.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be taking up spots.
No, because Darby, as we saw before Sting showed up, Darby is more than capable of thriving on his own. I mean, granted, I don't think Sting's the problem. It's just, I think the problem is they just use the same form. Like you always say, the same formula over and over and over and over and over again. And yeah, the fans like it, but after a while, they're not going to, because they're, like I said, you've seen one match of theirs, you've seen all of them.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. There's not much to be said. Sting and Darby Allin get the win. Darby Allin hits the coffin drop, gets the 1-2-3, and everybody go home's happy. And then next up on the card, a match that I really, really enjoyed. It was Toni Storm defending the AEW Interim Women's Championship against her former friend, Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter on the up and up. One of those, I feel like Jamie Hayter was put in this position because she organically got over with the fans, and they had no choice but to put her in this position.
Yeah, and they, and I even said this when we were watching the match. I told Mom, this is literally also a byproduct of the mistake they made with the Acclaimed a few months ago. You didn't put the titles on them the first time. The crowd was fuming, and so you had to right your wrongs by literally running it back about a month later, a few weeks later. They didn't make the mistake again. They knew when to pull the trigger, and you heard that crowd come unglued when she won. The only problem I had with the match, overall, loved it. Hard hitting, those two, like, no way of putting it, beat the shit out of each other from start to finish. And the only problem I had was they kind of overdid the interference a little bit at the end, where it's like, okay, well, Rebel had to come out, and then Britt had to come out, and then they both are trying to do stuff. And the problem was that it was kind of, or maybe this is the point, failed attempt after failed attempt at interference was giving me this like sinking feeling of, oh god, Jamie's not winning this match, is she? Because we've seen this before where the heels throw everything at the good guys and they just rise to the occasion and overcome the odds. And I'm like, please let's not do this, because this crowd, myself included, are going to be pissed if Jamie loses this match. But you know, lo and behold, they genuinely surprised me, because I did not expect Jamie to win. But you know what? I am over the moon happy that she did, because like you said, she organically got herself over and the fans love her. And I think AEW learned their lesson from the Acclaimed, and sometimes you got to listen to the fans. And I think it paid off with this one, because Jamie's going to be a great champion.
I think so too, and I think it's very compelling to see what's going to happen next, because we all kind of were like, well, there's no way Britt Baker is going to allow Jamie Hayter to just come in and take the title, but she really didn't have a problem with it. You know, she for now, that's a good point. They're going to have to get a couple steps together to get to a point where we may see Jamie Hayter versus Britt Baker. But I'm interested in seeing what's going to happen now with both women, because Toni Storm was a great champion. I hate the idea. I hate the idea of the interim. I have a feeling you do too.
Yeah, because I just find it stupid, because if you have the belt, you're the champion. That's it. Point blank, period. There's no, well, the actual champion's like gone, so no, it doesn't count. It's like, no, Jamie is the champion. There is no like asterisk next to it. Like, come on.
I'm with you. I hate the idea of the interim champion. I think whoever has the belt is the champion, the rightful person. And if you can't stay healthy, I mean, that's the way it goes, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so moving on to another championship match, we had the Acclaim defending the AEW Tag Team Championships against Swerve and Our Glory in the third in a trilogy of matches. And we talked about the first one. Like you said, it was Swerve and Our Glory taking the first one when it should have been the Acclaim, and then the Acclaim get the win and take the titles from them. So who's to get the third one? Well, this match was pretty good, but I think the story of it was we finally see the disillusion of Swerve and Our Glory, because Swerve's ego got the best of him.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really good ending for them to have. It just like tied up all the loose ends. Would I say the match itself was their best out of the three? No, I don't think so. But it was still a really good match. These teams have the chemistry. They know how to work well together. They know how to tell a story, like with Bowens in his shoulder.
Yes.
And then within Swerve and Our Glory, where, like you said, Swerve's ego got the best of him, slaps Keith. Keith's not going to take that stand, like, lying down. And he's like, you know what? You think you're such a hotshot? You get the titles by yourself, which clearly wasn't going to happen. So, yeah, it was nice to see Keith finally say, you know what? I'm kind of done dealing with your shit. So, karma got the best of Swerve, unfortunately. But he kind of asked for it.
Yeah, and like you said, it wasn't the best match out of their trilogy of matches. It was suffice, but I feel like the story of Keith Lee finally coming to his senses and realizing how bad of a person Swerve actually is, is good TV. I feel like if they even made it a feud, you know, singles feud, I think that'd be great. I think that should be what should happen, so that way none of those men get like thrown to the wayside and forgotten about, you know. Capitalizing on it while it makes sense and while the iron is hot, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the Acclaim retain the AEW Tag Team Championships, because Swerve and Our Glory, well, they're no more, because Swerve Strickland doesn't know how to keep his ego in check, basically.
Yeah.
All right, so that takes us to the main event. Out of all the matches, this is the 13th and final match on the card. This match was actually, looking at the times for the different matches, this was the longest match on the card, and this match only went 23 minutes and 15 seconds.
Wow. That's surprising, honestly.
Yeah, I thought that was really surprising, with the second being the four-way match for the ROH World Championship coming in second for 21 minutes. But I thought this was interesting that all of this happened with only a 23-minute span. The match between MJF and Jon Moxley. Jon Moxley defending the AEW World Championship against MJF, who is cashing in his casino ladder match poker chip.
Sure. I don't get the rules, but okay.
Yeah, I don't get the rules either. Is it a cash in? Is it whatever? But that's neither here or there. The match itself was okay. I mean, it was basically what I would expect when you have a Jon Moxley and MJF match. Jon Moxley is going to be the brawler. He's going to take it to MJF with his fist. And MJF is going to try to outsmart him with his wrestling brain and be more of a technical. I felt like MJF was trying to get under the skin of Jon Moxley throughout this match. To try to outclass him and make him look less than in the ring. So it was still a pretty good match. They tried to sell a knee injury to MJF. Like his knee was bummed out throughout the match. But, you know, I think the only thing that kind of saved this match from being okay to mid was what happened leading to the finish, where William Regal seemingly turned on Jon Moxley.
Which I didn't see coming at all.
I didn't either. And this is the craziest thing. I'm usually good at picking up swerves and things like that. Yeah. I never saw this swerve coming. And apparently it was in our mentions.
Yeah, Mike. Mike called it.
Mike, our good friend who listens to every episode, actually called this and said, I see William Regal turning on Jon Moxley. Now, I usually don't respond. I kind of let them simmer, and then we talk about it here on the show. But I kind of glanced over that, admittedly.
Yeah, and you're like, wait.
Because when he said, I called it and I see what happened, I scrolled back and I checked, and he actually did. And he's the only person that could pick up on a swerve like that. That was perfectly done.
Yeah, I was definitely impressed. As far as the match itself, like you said, it was okay. I think they did way too much at the ending, though.
Mm.
One ref takes a bump, and then another one takes a bump. So I'm just like, okay, here we go. So it just kind of like lessened it for me. So I think they could have like simplified that a little more. But again, the Regal thing like threw me for a loop. I'm like, did he literally just do that? And he did. And it kind of does, it plays into that compelling TV thing where it's, did he do that because he's aligning with MJF? Did he do it just because he's acknowledging how good he actually is? What are we doing with the Combat Club? Which we have plenty of questions about that this week. So it's like, you want to tune in tomorrow night to see what happens, because we have some questions and they better get answered. But did you happen to listen to the post-media scrum, apparently, with MJF?
I did listen to the MJF portion, and I admit it, he got me.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I'm like, we just talked about this on the show, and he did. As soon as he's like, you guys hung on every word I've been saying the last few months, I'm like, you son of a bitch, you got us again.
He got me, because that's what we talked about all last week. We didn't even really talk about the match. We were just talking about how much MJF could possibly be a babyface character, and how his promo was so great, and it made us want to root for him and actually see him win the title and things like that. And it was just like, it was a ruse, and we fell for it.
Yeah, it was excellent work, but god damn it, that was whatever. But overall, the match itself, it was definitely not the best of the night, for sure. It was okay.
Yeah, the match itself was okay. I think the swerve put it over and made it into, okay, this is something you gotta see. Because if you've been following the story, you would have never seen this coming.
No, not at all.
You would have never seen this coming. And in the end, it's much like what we've been saying throughout the entire show. What's going to happen with so-and-so? Who's going to go against this person? What's going to happen with this person? It's basically what's going to happen now with Jon Moxley. Is he going to take his sabbatical? Like you say, is Regal aligning himself with MJF? And who's the next person that's going to come after MJF? Now, the World Title Eliminator Tournament is, if you're listening to this, it is Wednesday, so it is that tonight. So it's going to be between Ethan Page and Ricky Starks, and I really think an MJF Ricky Starks program would be some good stuff. But I feel like they're going with Ethan Page because of the simple fact of the Firm stuff, where MJF was beating up on the Firm after they bullied him. But man, Ricky Starks, MJF would be good stuff.
I think you can't really go wrong with either of them, honestly. I'm excited to see who wins this, because this is go one of two different ways. You can do the typical babyface versus heel thing, or you can kind of spice things up a little bit, and you got two guys you really don't want to root for, but they got some beef with each other, so I'm excited to see who wins this one.
Yes, yes, I'm excited. I'm so taken aback by the whole swerve, and I'm upset at Regal.
Yeah, like, how could you?
How could you, Regal? Because, like, Regal, he's a villain, but yeah. It was almost like he was in his elder stage of his life, realizing, like, it's time to do away with the villain, help people, like, in the Blackpool Combat Club. And now you ruined the Blackpool Combat Club, and their only feud was against the JAS.
Don't even remind me. That's just... It makes me sad. It really makes me sad because,
oh man,
so much potential.
Yeah, so much potential indeed. MJF defeats Jon Moxley thanks to the help of William Regal and is your new AEW World Champion. So that is something that is something definitely to look forward to on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to be one hell of a promo.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, before we get into the mailbag segment of the show, I just want to go through the polls really quickly as fast as I can to give the results, just so that you guys know how everything broke down and everything went, you know, because that's what we do here on the podcast when there's a pay-per-view. If you follow our Twitter at Ringside Rundown, every pay-per-view, I ask you guys what you thought of the match and to leave your ratings for the flame emoji polls. So, really quickly, Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus gets 4 flame emojis. 50% of the votes that came in gave it 4 flame emojis, so good for them. Let's scroll up and see what else we have next. Next, we have Rey Fénix getting the win for Death Triangle over the Elite. Asked you guys what you thought of the match. 92% of the votes that came in for that match gave it 4 flame emojis.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong there. The Jade Cargill match. Mm-hmm. Asked you guys what you thought of the match, and 47% of the votes that came in gave it 2 flames.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Asked you guys what you thought of Saraya's return match. And like you said, this probably was the most polarizing match of the night. Out of all the votes that came in, we have a tie. We have a tie between 4 flames and 1 flame.
At
31%.
And the weird thing is, I agree with neither of those choices. I would have given it probably around 3.
3 flames?
Yeah, for all the circumstances surrounding the match with Saraya and everything and how it turned out, you really couldn't have asked for anything more.
For sure, for sure. Asked you guys what you thought of the TNT Championship match. 33% of the votes that came in gave it 1 flame. One flame for that match. Sting and Darby Allin getting the win at Full Gear. Asked you guys what you thought of it, and 44% of the votes that came in gave it 4 flames. Now I gotta scroll up a little bit because I got a little bit ahead of myself. I lost one of the matches in the polls. The Jericho match, the one I hated the most. That's probably why. Out of all the votes that came in, 45% gave it 4 flame emojis. So,
it's a 3.
3?
Yeah, it's a 3.
I would go with 3. I think 3 is good. Next, Jamie Hayter winning the AEW Women's Championship. Out of all the votes that came in, 69% gave it 4 flames. And then we go to the tag team match between the Acclaim and Swerve in Our Glory, and 56% gave it 4 flame emojis. So you guys kind of enjoyed that one. I would have gave it 3.
Yeah, I would have given it 3. It wasn't their best that they've done with each other.
Yeah. And then finally the main event, where William Regal turned on Jon Moxley and helps MJF win the AEW World Championship. 58% of the votes that came in gave it 4 flames. I have to believe it's because everybody got swerved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I asked you guys what you thought of the show overall and what's your final grade for AEW Full Gear, and 61% of the votes gave it 4 flames. I think this show deserved 4 flames.
Yeah, I'd say so. If anything, maybe like 3.5.
Yeah.
It was again, it wasn't like all out 2021 level of like good, but I don't think any other pay-per-view is going to ever really stack up to that one, at least for me. So, yeah, I'd still say it was pretty decent. I'd say there's a couple, again, like the whole Darby and Jeff Jarrett match and the triple threat for the TNT. It's like that pretty much knocked it down to about 3.5 for me. If those two wouldn't have been on the card, it probably would have been 4.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like I said, those two matches were kind of the dark point of the show. Kind of the low point where everybody kind of can get a breather in before the big matches like the women's match and the main event and the tag team title match. So I agree with your assessment. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Which is sad, but it had to happen.
But that brings us to our favorite segment of the show. It's the mailbag segment where we answer some of your questions and see what you guys have on your mind, especially when it comes to AEW Full Gear. So you got the questions in hand, Shay. Hit them.
All right, let's go with Jeff's because I got some questions from Jeff this week. So thank you for your questions as always. Still got to figure out the time for the Joshi podcast. Still got to work on that. But speaking of the Joshis, he started things off with a fun fact that Jamie Hayter was a former member of the Stardom unit Odeo Tai, and she's also a former SWA champion and shared the Goddess of Stardom tag titles with Bea Priestley. So from what I remember, too, I knew Jamie was a big deal over on the in the Japanese scene, so that is not surprising at all. So it's good that she's finally getting that recognition over here, too. Our first question, and I already know just from glancing at all of them earlier, we're going to have a lot of questions about these, so we might repeat some things. Does William Regal's betrayal spell the end of the Blackpool Combat Club, or will the club still thrive without him? I mean, it'd be really tough to keep calling yourself the Blackpool Combat Club when really the only reason it's Blackpool's because it was Regal. So, yeah. It's like, what do you do? Like, they kind of put themselves in a pickle with this one.
Yeah, I think the Blackpool Combat Club, I think Regal was the identity of it because I feel like everyone in the Blackpool Combat Club was an extension of Regal.
Yeah, like, you know? If it wasn't for him, nobody would have joined. He, like, kind of brought them all together.
Yeah, he kind of brought them all together. And the funny thing is the only way you got into the Blackpool Combat Club was if you fought with other members of the Blackpool Combat Club.
Exactly. You know?
And so who can make sense of that chaos other than William Regal? It doesn't make sense for anybody else to come in and try to figure that out for them. And I think it'll be good if they do separate. The only one that's going to kind of suffer from it is Wheeler Yuta.
Yeah.
Because he's still so young. I feel like he doesn't really have a direction. Whereas if Bryan Danielson goes on his own, he has a direction. If Claudio goes out on his own, he has a direction. And obviously, John Moxley is John Moxley, so he has a clear direction any way he wants to go. So I feel like Wheeler Yuta is the only casualty to this Blackpool Combat Club fiasco.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be very interesting to see how they kind of like book themselves out of this one because, yeah, they kind of put them in or themselves into a corner with this whole thing. But I guess we may have answers technically tonight. We might not. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
This is a good one. If we leave out Roman Reigns and Bianca Belair, which male and female wrestler do we think has had the best 2022 up until this point?
Male? Probably Seth Rollins.
I'd say consistency-wise, yeah. It would definitely be Seth.
Yeah, because of his matches with Cody and then obviously winning the United States Championship. In a time where secondary titles are starting to be important, you know, you put the U.S. title on Seth Rollins, it's automatically a big deal. You know, like he makes it a big deal during a time where secondary titles are starting to become a really big deal. So it's a good thing, I think. So for me, excluding Roman Reigns, I'm gonna have to go Seth Rollins. For the female side, if we're excluding Bianca Belair,
it's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It is tough. If we're excluding Bianca Belair, I guess Ronda Rousey, to be honest with you. I mean,
it hurts maybe to say.
Either Ronda or Liv.
Yeah.
Liv kind of was compelling enough to put the title on. I felt like, I don't understand why they even took the title off of her, to be honest with you, and put it back on Ronda. But, I mean, the good thing about it is we're getting Ronda versus Shotzi, and Shotzi's kind of, this is her first time to shine in the pay-per-view spotlight. So, good for her. I'm excited for her in that regard.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But, yeah, female for me is tough to choose.
Yeah, I feel like for the men, I feel like aside from Seth, you would, I think, almost have to say Moxley as well, because the guy was probably not supposed to have as busy of a year as he did.
Yeah,
like, he was supposed to have a break, and he came in, and he's like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to, you know, hold on to the title and just be the backbone of AEW until I'm not needed anymore, which obviously was Sunday. But yeah, I'd say just reliability-wise and adversity-wise, I would say Moxley. Women's wise, though. Oh, yikes. That's tough. Because you can't really say Becky because she's been hurt for most of... Well, I mean... Becky had a pretty consistently good year, too, until she got hurt.
Yeah. I think she gave us a good 6 to 8 months out of the year, I think.
And then you got Liv, obviously, which that was kind of a shame that it happened the way it did with Ronda. I'm trying to think of anybody on the AEW side. I feel like you can't really say Toni Storm because she wasn't there the whole year, I don't think.
No.
So that's kind of, like, tough. I mean, I guess, yeah, I would just probably stick with Moxley and Becky, probably, just from consistency and alone.
Yeah, I think so. I think those are good choices. I didn't think of giving the chip to the ace of AEW, as I like to call him, and Jon Moxley. I feel like he is the ace of AEW, and I didn't even bother to think of Becky because she's been injured, but she did give us a good 6 to 8 months out of the year where she did some great stuff with Bianca Belair. So, yeah, I think those are solid choices.
Yeah, like their matches at WrestleMania and SummerSlam were classics. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's just, like you always say, it's tough because it's like we're almost to the end of the year and it doesn't even seem like it. It just seems like, especially when you get to the end of the year, it's almost like January, February, March seems like years ago at this point, but
yeah, it does.
Even last month seems like a while ago, but anyway, I digress. So yeah, I would definitely go with those. With the new regime in WWE, do we think that there's a chance that they could end up trying to form a partnership with other companies like Bushiroad, who owns both New Japan and Stardom? I feel like they'd be more willing to do it now, because Triple H does not put me, obviously, in the mind of Vince, where it's like, we can't work with other people because we have to be the best. It's like, you can be the best by working with other people. So I wouldn't put it past Triple H to do something like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like you said, I think now is the perfect time to do it. It's a new regime, new ideologies in terms of professional wrestling, and new ideologies as to where WWE stands in the spectrum of wrestling. You know, before wrestling in WWE was a dirty word, and now they're embracing professional wrestling. They're embracing people having backstories, like coming from the independents or coming from Japan and things like that. And even going as far as mentioning matches like Shinsuke Nakamura taking on the Great Muta in Japan for pro wrestling Noah. You know,
it's crazy.
So I think a partnership, I think if you look at it, if we can get something like the Great Muta versus Shinsuke Nakamura for pro wrestling Noah when Shinsuke Nakamura is a WWE superstar, I think there is a door opening where we can get some companies to come in and maybe from overseas work with WWE. More, I don't know. I wouldn't say maybe New Japan, but maybe Pro Wrestling Noah might be open to it.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be really interesting if Stardom was, because they mention Io Sky and Triple Tails. Never thought we'd hear mm-hmm. that on a WWE broadcast. So I would be interested to see if they would do it. I think it would be nothing but beneficial. It's just a matter of if they'd be willing to do it.
I agree.
Funny enough, we did talk about this a little earlier. What are the odds that AEW drops the interim off Jamie Hayter's title and just makes her the actual champion? And should they even do this in the first place? Should they do it? I don't think they should, because you still kind of have Thunder Rosa. Like, she's still a thing, even though no one really mentioned it.
She's still a thing.
She's still there. She's still, quote-unquote, the champion, because she's hurt. So, if it were up to me, I would. I just don't think they're going to do it.
I would take away the interim part. I just, like we said earlier, it just doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the person who's holding the champion, who's holding the championship, is the champion.
Yeah.
That's just, it is. That's just exactly the way it is. So, I hope that they do drop it. Yeah, I hope that they do drop it soon. A way that they could do it is just Jamie Hayter saying, I'm not going to go by the interim champion. Mm-hmm. I am the AEW champion until somebody takes this title away from me. And then
exactly.
Thunder Rosa can show up if she's healed up and try to take that title. She could surely use the claim that she's the rightful AEW champion. But in a lot of fans' eyes, the rightful champion is Jamie Hayter.
Yes, and I am one of those people.
I am too.
All right, good. So, yeah, if it were up to us, we would absolutely make her the actual AEW Women's Champion, not interim, because that just has like a... it just has like a scummy kind of like context to it, because it's almost like, again, like an asterisk next to your name. So it's like, no. I'm going to let you have the floor with this one, because I feel like this one you will... lose your mind on. How much longer do we have to endure Chris Jericho as a champion or a main event player? It is beyond old at this point.
It just pains me.
You and me both.
It's like I'm trying not to be disrespectful, because I don't want to be part of that echo chamber of wrestling fan that thinks he knows better than the wrestler themselves. I'm not trying to take anything away from Chris Jericho's genius, his career, his accolades. And I'm saying he can still offer something of value to the company. He just doesn't have to win a title.
Yeah, but...
that's it.
Yeah, that's literally what it is. It's just,
he can be something of value to the company. Look at Bryan Danielson. Bryan Danielson is out there training people, and he's losing. And he's losing title opportunities that she should already have.
Because
he's Bryan Danielson and not Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
You know? And he's not doing it in a way that CM Punk does it, where he tries to force his ideologies on other people. I don't get this Chris Jericho. It's just driving me insane. I'm going to lose sleep over it, I think.
If anyone is gonna be like tossing and turning at night because of Chris Jericho, it is Eric. Confirmed.
Bane of my existence.
I feel that. I wholeheartedly agree.
Man.
All right, let me make sure I got the... I have to do the order right, because we talked about this in the production meeting. So, okay, so with Bianca refusing to tell us who her last member is for War Games until SmackDown, who do we think is going to be the reveal? Jeff thinks it could be one of four people: Tegan Nox, Candice LeRae, Becky Lynch, or Beth Phoenix. And once again, those would have been the ones I picked, because I have the last few weeks we've been talking about it.
Beth Phoenix, I totally forgot that happened.
And it makes total sense, especially and the thing is that if you think about it, every single one of those names makes sense in some form or fashion. Tegan Nox comes back immediately, Dakota Kai. Like, that's the first thing people are going to think of. Mm-hmm. You have Candace come back. If I remember correctly, before she was quote unquote out with injury, Damage Control were the ones that beat her up in the first place, if I remember correctly. So she clearly has beef with it. I mean, even if I'm pretty sure that was what happened. And regardless, she had beef with Damage Control before she left, so there's history there. Becky Lynch obviously righted itself because she stood up to Damage Control when they debuted at SummerSlam with Bianca, so that would make sense. And Beth Phoenix, kind of a duh moment, because that would make total sense because Rhea's the one that killed her, essentially.
I like the way you put that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way I could remember it because she looked like she was dead. But so every single one of those choices honestly makes sense in some form or fashion. If I had to pick one, it's tough because I'm sure you're just automatically expecting me to say Tegan Nox.
Yeah, I am.
Unfortunately, though, I would not have. I mean, would I? Absolutely. But I think it's going to either be Becky Lynch or Beth Phoenix for storyline's sake, I think. Because out of the four of those, Tegan has, like, the least really beef with any of them. Like, she really only has a problem with Dakota, which, to me, I want to see that. But that doesn't really make sense in the whole grand scheme of things right now. So I think it's got to be Becky or Beth. And either one of them makes sense. So I think one of those two is who we're going to see.
I completely forgot about Beth Phoenix, but like those names, like you said, all of them have beef with Damage Control. So you can't really go wrong because any of them come out, you're like, that makes perfect sense, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, after taking a concerto to the head, I would love to see Beth Phoenix go in there and go into War Games. She knows what War Games is about because she did a lot of commentary during War Games matches.
Yeah, so she knows what goes into these things.
Yeah, she knows, and she sees that her husband's back. I'm sure the itch got to her a little bit, you know, seeing her husband back and doing his thing. She probably got the itch too. And I mean, for me, I think Beth Phoenix is vastly underrated. In terms of what she did in WWE during her time. And yes, she is a Hall of Famer, but I feel like she doesn't get spoken enough, you know, how much she's influenced people like Bianca Belair, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and influenced that type of wrestler, like the Jordan Graces of the world, where power is something that a woman can bring to the table when it comes to professional wrestling. So
yeah, she didn't fit the mold of the divas back then.
No, she definitely did not. She did her own thing. But again, the story, I think, with the concerto being as brutal as it was, man, that would be such a great story for her to come back and get into War Games and throw some scraps with the women.
Exactly, especially her and Rhea. I would pay money to see that.
Yes, repeatedly. I would pay money to see that one-on-one.
Yeah, you know that has to happen at some point, I hope.
Yeah.
If that means we get that instead of her in War Games, I am perfectly okay with that.
Yes, for sure.
I will take that trade-off.
I like it.
All right, and then Jeff's last question starts with a bit of a shout-out first and then goes into a question. So he wanted us to give a massive shout-out and congratulations to Kairi, who defeated Mayu Iwatani at the Stardom New Japan crossover show to become the inaugural IWGP Women's Champion. And with that being said, she can defend her title against any woman around the world whose company works with New Japan. Are there any women in the U.S. that we would automatically want to see Kairi face for the title?
Hmm.
Oh, yes. I have one name. I think we know who I'm going to say just from history alone. Shayna, come on. Like, those two had classics in WWE and NXT. So I would like to see them run that back again, especially with like this new kind of version of Kairi that we got now. I would like to see it.
Yeah, that was, I always enjoyed that feud because it was like a lot like the person I'm going to mention. Kairi was like massively undersized against Shayna, and she still had a lot of fight and underdog fight into her to make the matches compelling. So I think, but I want to keep it sort of, and I don't know if this has happened. That's why we need this Joshi podcast to happen, because I have so many questions.
Yeah.
I would love to see, since it's New Japan, and New Japan kind of has an open door to AEW, I would love to see Riho versus Kairi.
Yeah. Or Shida.
Or Shida too, but you know how I feel about Riho.
Yes, you love Riho.
I love me some Riho. So like I would love to see Riho and Kairi. If it was WWE, I would love to see who in WWE would, like you said, Shayna is a good choice. And I feel like Shayna is going to be coming up on the up and up now that she's finally had that allegiance with Ronda Rousey being shown on TV. So I'm going to have to go with you, and I'm going to have to say Shayna from WWE too.
Yeah, see? Exactly. So I would like to see it.
Any we would them. Both love to see it, yeah.
There's so many other names, but I don't want to obviously like bog down all the... Take forever, but let's see. So I think those are all of Jeff's questions. So thank you again, Jeff, for your questions as always.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. So I think we're going to go with moms, which are kind of funny because none of these are actually questions. They're just comments. But
we love them. We love them all equally.
So, Mom, thank you for your comments. First one. She thought the Regal turn was outstanding. Since he is the ultimate villain, what were our thoughts? Shock.
Shock. Didn't expect it to happen.
Nope.
Didn't want it to happen. No. Felt like I saw my grandpa betray one of his friends. Mm-hmm. You know? It was just, in terms of a pro wrestling swerve, never saw it coming. I'm blindsided by it.
Yeah, I was also blindsided by it, which maybe it was a good thing, because there have been like swerves and turns that were like, why did we need to see that? That one was like, okay, that one was kind of like, ah, you got us. It was one of those, I guess I wasn't angry about it at the end. I'm just like, we knew who was going to win the match. It was just a matter of how we were going to get there. So I was more like, oh, that's how we're going to do it. Okay.
Yeah, my heart just kind of sank.
You're just like, no, Regal, why are you doing this?
Regal, no. Because I never saw it coming, man.
No, me neither. Never saw it coming. Ugh, it was too much. Our hearts couldn't take it.
Yeah.
She thought the Danhausen entrance was super cool and was happy that the teeth have returned. Yeah, you and me both.
Yes.
I'd been waiting for him to finally use those, and I mean, granted, he had to be the very evil Danhausen to do it, but you know what? If that means you're going to see the teeth, then sign me up. Either way.
I love it.
I love that pit, the, like, at the end, too, when they all won, and he's, like, holding up the spike. Everybody except Rocky is like, what the hell are we just experiencing? And Rocky is just happy that they won. It was, like, that picture you saw, like, all over Twitter was hilarious. Because I think, like, the thing that got me was Trent's response to it, I think, where he's like, this photo was taken moments after Dan physically assaulted someone with a spike.
I'm great like, stuff.
Yeah, like that checks out for Dan. But yeah, I agree. I thought it was cool. I just hope that they can keep it up, because if they made it a one-off thing, I'm going to be very sad.
Me too.
I mean, obviously this one's very obvious for you and I. Jamie winning was long overdue. Mm-hmm. I agree. Again, take the interim off her name and just let her be the champ, because I think she's more than earned it. Very interested to see how long Britt plays second fiddle with Jamie, because we know it's coming. It's just a matter of when. How long is she going to put up with it and be supportive, quote unquote, of her friend? So I'm excited to see that, because that's inevitably going to lead to a Britt and Jamie feud. And if that's the case, you can take all of my money. And yeah.
I'm excited for it.
Me too. And finally, she thought Keith walking out on the tag title match was epic.
I thought so too. Yeah, I thought so too. It was one of those things where Swerve slapped Keith Lee, and it was like so many thoughts. Like, yes. finally this is going to happen. But man, he just smacked the shit out of Keith Lee, which is the dumbest thing you could possibly do. So
I like, so many, we all like collectively held our breaths. We're like, oh shit.
You really did. We really did, because it happened. You just heard the crowd go, oh no.
And like, and so we were expecting him to get like murdered.
Yeah, we really did. And tremendous reserve on Keith Lee's part to say, you know what, I'm out of here. You try to win these titles on your own, which he didn't do it, and the Acclaim keeps the titles. So I'm interested in seeing a Keith Lee versus Swerve Strickland one-on-one feud. I think that'll be good stuff because it's a contrast of styles, yet it's not, because Keith Lee can move with Swerve.
Mm-hmm.
He can keep up with Swerve.
That's another one of those where you can take all my money to see that. I am excited for when that happens. I will say, though, the masochist in me kind of thought for a split second as when Keith walked out, I'm like, what's going to happen if Swerve actually wins this match? What do you do then?
I mean, I thought the same.
I would have been interested to see that, but obviously that was never going to happen. But I cannot wait for a one-on-one feud with those two, because those two are going to bring it, and I am going to be more than happy because I love them both. So I can't wait to see that.
For sure.
All right, so those are all of Mom's comments. So thank you again, Mom. And our final four questions of the night come from Jack. So Jack, thank you for your questions as always. I love how he worded this. Do you think the Blackpool Combat Club can continue without the Blackpool guy?
It would just be the Combat Club.
At that rate, yeah. Can it continue? I don't really know, because they were kind of hinting with whole, like, Danielson and Yuta, like, not getting along, that there's already dissension. Maybe Regal brings that up. Maybe he's like, you know what? I got tired of you guys losing focus, so I sided with someone who knows what they want, I guess, and screw you guys. So maybe that's what's going to happen. I don't know. If it does, come back and watch this again or listen to this again, and you can tell me, I told you so, but I would just think that would make sense, I guess. But will it continue without him? I mean, as the Blackpool Combat Club, it can't. Just by default.
It just doesn't make sense.
No. So you know what? I just say, like, short answer, no. Because, again, you can't, without the Blackpool guy, you can't really have the Blackpool Combat Club. So, no. It's just a matter of what's going to become of it. And I don't know the answer to that one. That one's why we all want to watch Dynamite to see what happens.
Yeah, I have a feeling they're just going to kind of splinter off and do their own thing.
Yeah, I think so. It's just going to be one of the, at least I think, biggest missed opportunities AEW has had, because people love the Combat Club, and the only thing you could give them was a Jericho Appreciation Society feud.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Don't do it to me. I already went on one Jericho rant.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next question then. Do we think Danhausen has more upside now that he has the extra evil side to his character? I hope so. I really do. Like I said, I feel like, even what I said last week, I feel like this might be one of those, he's very nice outside of the ring, and it's like the goofy Danhausen we all know and love, but if you piss him off enough, he turns into the very evil Danhausen, kind of like a very broad version of, like, Finn's, like, demon.
Yeah.
Pretty much like split personality almost, so.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And they could capitalize on that too, make that like a story. Like, he goes into a trance almost when the bell rings, and he just wants to create violence and do very evil things.
Yeah, like, you know, stabbing people with spikes, because, you know, everybody does that.
Yeah, what a perfect place to do that other than All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah, honestly, you're not going to see that in WWE, that's for sure. But yes, I do think hopefully that gives him more upside. I just hope they realize that before it's too late, because that'll be another big missed opportunity if they can't capitalize on Danhausen of all people. I mean, for God's sake, I think it's safe to say he's probably your best, like, merch guy.
Yeah, he could definitely sell some merch.
So I just hope they don't screw this up, because they got something there.
Could you imagine a Britt Baker Danhausen team?
Oh my God, because where do you think he gets the teeth from? Just get it from somewhere.
That'd be so great. I just thought of that. I don't know why.
Well, it makes sense. He has to get the teeth from somewhere. Why not the resident dentist? She probably has a good collection of them.
That'd be so great.
I would also pay money to see that. I would pay a lot of money to see a lot of things. If they were to happen, is another story, though. But Should they merge the Ring of Honor TV and TNT belts? No.
If they can't get a TV deal, what's the point of having the ROH TV title?
Okay, well, that's true, yeah. Well, you keep putting Jericho as a champion, you're not going to have to worry about that. At least it was up to us.
He's going to bring in the viewers.
Oh, yeah, bring in the big bucks. Whatever. When you put it like that, that does make sense.
I don't know what their dealing is. I don't know. Yeah. I know they have a pay-per-view on the 10th, I believe.
That's Super Card of Honor, I think. Now.
Is it that or is it Final Battle? It's one of the ROH pay-per-views.
I'll look it up. Let me look.
And, you know, it has Samoa Joe on the cover. He's supposedly the big deal about it.
Final Battle.
But yeah. Here's the thing, like, it's just going to be a bunch of random matches because they don't have any storylines.
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
it's just going to be random matches.
Yeah, like, you might want to put some of this on AEW TV so people actually want to go in and not just rely on big names to sell your pay-per-view. And then when people are actually watching it, it's like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, I mean, are they going to do something with the Briscoes? Who knows? You know, because the Briscoes are just there. Are they going to do something with FTR, who are the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions?
Yeah, where they been?
Yeah, who knows? Because nothing has been advertised except for that this pay-per-view is happening. So maybe in the coming months we'll see something. Or in the coming weeks, rather.
Yeah, I think it just, like you said, depends on the TV deal, if that ever happens. But I feel like for right now they're probably going to keep those as two separate titles, but that remains to be seen.
Yes.
And our last question. I love these kind of questions. If we had to go on a road trip with three wrestlers, who are we going with? I love these questions. I'll let you go first.
If I was to go on a road trip with three wrestlers, it'd probably be Riddle.
Oh boy.
Riddle, Montez Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And who else? Who else would I go on a road trip with? That would keep me laughing. Riddle, Montez Ford, and damn, who else? Someone from AEW, probably Ricky Starks.
That would be a life of the party.
Could you imagine that road trip? That would be crazy. Nobody would ever shut up.
God, that'd be wild. Maybe that might not work. It might work against you after a while, but no, that seems like it would be a pretty lively group. I feel like a couple of my answers are going to be obvious, but not for the reasons you would expect. Okay, so the first one would be Nyla, because I think she would definitely provide the comedy of the trip.
Yes, for sure.
And again, this is obvious, but not in the way you would think. Shayna, because I think people don't really understand how funny and like entertaining she actually is outside of the ring. If you like watch her stuff on YouTube, she's like hilarious and like actually has a personality. So that, and we would just talk Star Wars like the whole time. So in video games, so that would be for that. And then I feel like for the complete opposite reason of that, I would pick Malakai Black, because I feel like he would be really cool to talk to about just like pretty much anything, because he seems like a very like philosophical kind of guy, and I like those conversations. So I feel like if you wanted to have like really deep conversation about like, I don't know, mental health or just like music or something, anything, he would be the guy to do it.
That'd be cool.
It'd be a lively road trip either way. for completely different reasons, but
that'd be great. That's such a great question.
Right? I love when we get questions like those, because we like the little lighthearted ones too.
For sure.
I do believe that is all of the questions for this week.
All right. What a mailbag segment that was.
That's great.
Yes, it was. What a great show. Today was a great show talking about AEW Full Gear. It was a great show in its own right, and I'm excited to see what AEW does going forward. Like I said, it felt like a shift in AEW's ideology with their new champions like Jamie Hayter and MJF. You know, you want to see what's going to happen. Is this going to be a different AEW now that they washed away the muck that they've gotten from the fallout of All Out?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's going to be very interesting.
For sure, for sure. Well, before we get out of here, just let you guys know where you can get in touch with us if you want to talk wrestling and you want to be a part of the show. And like I said, for every pay-per-view and things like that, we do flame emoji polls where you can vote and tell us what you thought of the matches. You can do so on Twitter at Ringside Rundown. Again, that's at Ringside Rundown. And that's the same handle for Instagram if you want some wrestling pictures with your Instagram feed. That's at Ringside Rundown. So don't be afraid to add us on both platforms. And if you have any questions and you want to be a part of the mailbag segment, the best time to do it is to do it on Twitter. Usually the day before a recording, we record an episode, I ask you guys on Twitter if you have any questions, comments, opinions, rants, or anything like you want us to voice on the podcast, and then that's when you send it all in. So don't be afraid to lend us your voice and be a part of the show. If you want to get in touch with me personally, you can reach me on Twitter at WrestlingChron. That's Wrestling C-H-R-O-N. I also Twitch stream. I stream on Twitch Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, twitch.tv/EricTheGhost. That's again, twitch.tv/EricTheGhost. Shay, where can they get in touch with you?
Can find me mainly on Twitter at ShayleneHixon21. I'll be most likely screaming about the Penguins, died of hypothermia at the Steelers games and watching them lose. Yeah, so mainly just sports and the occasional drag here and there, but it's a wild time on my Twitter. So if you, it's not for the faint of heart, let's put it that way.
Love it. Yeah, go definitely check her out on Twitter. What else is there? I feel like obviously where you can listen to this podcast. It's available all across the board on the internet. You can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Apple Podcasts, and various other platforms. All you got to do is search Ringside Rundown, and you'll be able to find it there. If you can't find it, one of us will deliver a link to you on a silver platter. An actual silver platter will be delivered to you with a link where you can listen to the episode.
I still need to use it.
Yeah, it's just sitting there collecting dust.
It really is. Sitting on my shelf as we speak.
So definitely check us out. Like I said, it's available all across the board on the internet. I was going to say iTunes. Apple Podcast.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. I just showed my age there.
We just went back in time.
Yeah, we did. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, wherever you listen to podcasts. Ringside Rundown is available. And we're going to come back next week with an episode covering Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to Survivor Series?
Oh, absolutely. Especially the War Games matches. I am like stoked for these because I'm excited to see who's going to be the other member of Team Bianca, because we had some guesses today and we're going to see if we're correct. And I think we will be.
There you have it. So share this episode amongst your friends. Let us know what you thought. Let us know what you thought about AEW Full Gear. We will see you next week covering Survivor Series. Until then, my name is Eric Vasquez for Shay Hixon. We'll see you later.
See you later, guys.